Just no less than $5 million.
Yeah, they made $5 million or more.
Mm-hmm. So you pretty much have to. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and say 4.99 million.
Welcome, plotters, to this month's podcast. My name is Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
Or maybe you put the cartridge into the game console and then you turned on the game console.
The fan turned on, a little nuclear reactor powered up.
You get information about government secrets.
Atari calls you personally to thank you for playing one of their games.
Which you somehow dug out of a desert where they buried 2,000 copies of it.
Atari calls you personally to thank you for playing one of their games.
Ultimate customer satisfaction.
Coffee has not kicked in yet.
Is this Lydia Malcolm?
Yes.
Good. Click.
Dad.
If someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes.
Okay, if I am picking up the phone, my initial reaction to anybody, even if I know them and they know me, is this is Lydia. I mean, of course it's Lydia. You're calling me. You probably know that it's Lydia.
Oh, I'm cold nowadays. When I was a kid, I'd be like, thank you for calling the Ray Residence. This is Naomi. How can I help you? Right? But like, that's kind of customer servicey, but it was close to that. And now it's hello.
Okay, so my dad has his own business. So when I was turning a teenager or like getting into that age, he was like, now, if you're going to pick up the line from line two, you have to answer in a very specific way. They sat us down and they taught us about how to answer a phone in a customer service kind of way. My parents specifically taught me that because they were like, if you're going to answer this, you got to sound professional, even if you're a kid.
It's true. I learned it from answering phones at like kids' houses I was babysitting at. So I'd be like, oh, this is blah, blah residence.
Yeah. Nobody told you had to do it. You just were like, I should do this in general.
Yeah.
Because I want to be respectful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then also stranger danger was like a huge thing in my family. So like if you asked for somebody and they weren't there, I'd be like, oh, they're in the shower right this second. Doesn't matter if it's 7 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'd be like, they're in the shower. Can I take a message?
Yeah. My parents were always like, don't ever tell them that we're not home. Just say, you know, they aren't available.
Yeah.
Wait, what movie are we doing?
Oh, we're just talking about stranger danger and kids being cautious for and about themselves.
And communicating over wireless devices.
Yeah. Self-preservation in the 80s is what we're talking about.
Cloak and Dagger! Pew, 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 pew.
This one's selection is from our fact checker, Sean. Who you might remember from
Man Baby?
Well, yeah, you might remember him guest starring on that episode, but you might remember Sean from our
Sean Facts.
Sean Facts.
That's a button Jen can push now anytime she wants.
Anytime you need to cut one of us off, you just press that button.
So this movie came out in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
I was an infant, so I didn't know anything about it till Sean suggested it. What about you guys?
Oh, I didn't know anything about this movie until Sean suggested it.
This is one of my earliest remembered movies.
Nice.
Yeah, it's up there with Return of the Jedi. And for some reason, I remember watching Return of the Jedi in the theaters, but I would have been like 2 or 3.
That's pretty cool, though.
And I almost have this vague remembrance of seeing this with The Last Starfighter, which is kind of a Sean fact we'll get into. But more than likely, no. I probably just watched it on VHS over and over and over again.
It has this sort of like action, like kids action movies that are probably not something you're supposed to take 100% seriously. It has this sort of, it reminds me of Flight of the Navigator. And maybe that's not just because of the fact that the kid from Flight of the Navigator looks so much like the kid from this movie. But it also kind of gives like the Explorers vibes, you know, kids going on these like, you know, epic adventures, and they're big and bombastic. But what I thought was most intriguing out of it was mostly the element of fantasy that they're trying to treat with so much respect. Like, I mean, it would have been easy to turn this movie into something where it was all in the kid's head until it wasn't.
So. Yeah, for sure. And I want to upvote your mention there of this being like a kid's version of another genre, because we kind of discussed that with Collateral Cinema when we were discussing Goonies and how there's this, it's almost a blend of genres. So it's a kid's movie, mm-hmm. but it's an espionage movie, whereas Explorers is kid's movie, but it's also sci-fi, and Goonies is kid's movie, but it's also adventure. And mm-hmm. definitely in the 80s, that was the big thing, was take all your genre movies and put them, make them with kids instead.
Right.
Naomi?
Oh, for sure. Like what is it? Monsters?
Monster Squad?
No. Well, yeah, but like also I was thinking the Monster Under the Bed one for some reason.
Little Monsters?
Yeah, I think so.
With
Howie Mandel.
Howie Mandel and Ben Savage.
Yeah.
Fred Savage.
Yeah.
One of the Savage kids.
That one.
Yeah.
Just, you know, let's take some horror and throw a kid on it. And
mm-hmm.
It's good. Solid. It's a trope. Yeah.
Did you mention where you'd seen this movie? Is this the first time?
I've watched it 3 times now. And they're the first 3 times I've ever watched it now.
She says so begrudgingly.
I'm not that mad about it, actually, but I don't know where I would have come across this. I don't get nostalgic for this kind of film. I mean, I certainly like these kinds of films, but they're not something that sits in the back of my head. Mine are like straight up fantasies like Willow or Princess Bride or
The Neverending Story.
Neverending Story. Your more fantastic sci-fis like Total Recall, and even further out there, like maybe Tank Girl. Just, you know, not quite this. The stuff aimed at my age group was never exactly what I was looking for. I mean, I guess they were aimed at my age group, but they didn't. There's this thing where people are like, and I need to see myself in film. Well, I'm very privileged because I'm Caucasian and cisgender. So like, there are little white girls in everything, and they're always like these super fancy, precious little things, right? So like, I don't have to look too far to see me in film, and that is not what interests me in film. So I haven't ever had to really need to identify with the antagonist in a lot of films. If I did identify with a character, it was normally like a B character who is like a character actor or like a really funny character. Not that I think I'm funny, but like they were like the person with the quips, and I always wanted to portray that in myself. But like, no, I mean, like, I'm not like, oh man, I'm a spy guy. Like, I wanted an imaginary friend as a kid, and I made some up, but I didn't believe in them. So I was like, this is my imaginary friend, except I know he's not real, and you know he's not real. And it was just kind of a bit I was trying out. It's so dumb. I know it's dumb, but like, I was dumb as a kid. And that stands true to time.
I never had imaginary friends. What I would do when I was a kid, and sometimes I'm going to be a little bit honest, still do it as an adult, I would practice what I would say in front of other people.
Ooh.
And so like I would have these conversations with people that I knew they weren't actually there.
Yes.
But it was like a conversation of like,
yes,
this is something that could happen. This is a conversation that I want to have.
Yes. I would practice role playing with characters that I loved.
With like fictional characters?
It could be fictional characters. It could be real life. Right now my current
Yes.
My current random conversation we would totally get along in real life is Neil Gaiman.
Yes, I love it so much.
But when I was a kid, when I started to cook, I would host like a little cooking show, and I'd have like the Betty Crocker out, and I would just be like, Worf,
yeah,
this is how you make Planet Earth's United States chocolate chip cookies according to the Betty Crocker cookbook. Come with me.
What I would do when I was younger is I would always be on like these interviews where people would be like, so we want to talk to you about your latest book.
Oh, yes.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the story. This is basically what's happening. And this is what I wanted to tell with it. And I'd be like, I would just be on some like evening talk show just talking about a book that I wrote that a lot of people liked.
Brilliant. Jen, confessions. Go on.
Jen's too smart to have any imaginary friends.
No, I didn't have imaginary friends, but I was pretty darn sure that I was an alien when I was a kid.
Okay.
Like 5 or 6. And I think that is sort of like a modified princess story version. You know, little girls always have this sort of like fantasy that their family couldn't possibly be their family. Mm-hmm. They must have a different family out there. So my modified version of that was being an alien. And we would, in California, there'd be like these long, flat areas in next to the highway. And I'd always like go past somewhere and say like, oh, that's where my spaceship crashed. And
that's so cute.
It is.
Yeah. So not necessarily like somebody present that I was communicating with, but the whole fantasy life of having this alternate existence.
So caveat to my having conversations with people that are fictional or I made them up or whatever. When Jen told me about this, my brain snapped back to like eight-year-old me, who actually probably younger, like 5 or 6, I would make up these people who were in love with me. And oftentimes, like, again, later on, like people like, I went through the entire Next Gen cast. They were all in love with me at some point or another. But when I was really, really young, we went to the skating rink and I got one of those roses that lit up with the battery pack. Remember those?
Yes.
Killer things. Oh, yes. Yeah. And I was like, and this, the alien came down and they were in love with me and they gave me this glowing rose that would let me know whenever they were thinking about me or like, it didn't really matter. I just had this fancy light up rose and I was like, an alien's in love with me. And then Jen was like, I used to think I was an alien. I'm like, we were meant to be.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that cute?
That is so adorable.
So dumb, but so cute.
I want both of you ladies to just put a pin in that story in your memory, because maybe somewhere down the new year, we might be addressing that sort of same storytelling in a movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's one you're going to pick later on.
It's one I'm going to pick. Girl. It's going to be my next pick. I'm not saying anything.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm super excited now.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Alien romance. We already did Earth Girls Are Easy.
And it's not going to be Earth Girls Are Easy. So
we're going to start with some Sean facts, maybe guess some money stuffs.
Yeah, so we've got
Sean Facts.
There's no point in having a button if we keep going after you push it.
But it's so much fun.
Sean Facts.
So there are some things that Sean was not able to find. One of those was the production cost. I looked around too, and I couldn't find it. But we do have a gross, how much the film grossed. Completely blind.
I'm so good at this, how I fail at it every time we do it.
How much would a film that starred, what's his name, Henry Thomas,
mm-hmm. yeah.
from E.T., how much would a film with
this
the E.T. kid?
Yeah, this is post-E.T. Right. You go first, Naomi.
Oh, great. This movie cost no less than... This movie earned no less than... Don't look at me. I want to take my kid. Oh, look, action, nostalgia, military, spike. It made you $5 million.
No less than $5 million.
Yes.
No. So not 7.5 million.
No.
Just no less than 5 million.
Yeah, they made $5 million or more.
Mm-hmm. So you pretty much have to. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and say 4.99 million.
Just so bad at this guessing.
You said or more.
Yes.
If I go higher than that, then...
You wouldn't be stepping on my toes. It's whoever's closest.
Okay. Well, then my real answer, that was my joke answer. My real answer is 10 million.
Okay.
Okay. No. Oh, no.
One of you, only one of you went over.
I think it was me.
Oh.
Congratulations, Naomi. You win.
How close was I, though?
It grossed $9.7 million.
No, like Lydia made it. Lydia won that. I mean, I know we're closest without going over, but like, if you're within like $500,000, I'll give it to Lydia.
I'm gonna say that the budget was $3.5 million, because then it means that it made its money back.
Mm-hmm.
Do we all agree that this movie should have made its money back?
Yeah. For what it was in its time, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it totally should have made its money.
Yeah, and Did we already mention, I know we mentioned that this is Sean's pick, but this is not his first 80s film pick.
For the podcast? Either.
And if you remember, he had another video game movie.
Oh, you might have just mentioned it just a few minutes ago.
You did, yes, you did. Yeah.
Maybe I did. Do you remember what the name of it was?
Last Starfighter, because I listened.
Be all fancy.
Doing that understanding after I hear you say words thing.
All right, so this is also our third video game movie. What was our third video game movie?
Okay, so we have Cloak and Dagger. We got Last Starfighter. The other video game movie, Super Mario Brothers.
That is correct. Is any
did they make a Never Ending Story video game?
I don't think so.
No, they just made a lot of sequels.
Oh.
One sequel had Jack Black in it. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, one sequel had Jack Black in it.
I think that's the same one with the kid from Free Willy.
I think
it's like the Canadian production version.
What is happening?
Well, I've got lots of production notes from Sean, so I will get those done now. And then I think we've got another page of in-scene notes as well. So even though we don't have, like, you know, how much it costs to make this movie, we still do have quite a bit of detail that we know. The first is that this movie was based on a Cornell Woolrich short story, The Boy Cried Murder, which had been filmed as The Window in 1949. It was originally released in a double feature with The Last Starfighter on July 13th, 1984, and was released separately on August 10th. So it really only was a month that it was together with The Last Starfighter.
Mm-hmm.
SEAL Team One's unit logo features a seal wrapped in a cloak holding a dagger, referencing the nature of their clandestine missions. A seal wrapped in a cloak. I'm guessing they mean like a image, like a seal as an image, not a seal like as in a armor seal.
That was the first one that I thought of.
Me too.
Maybe it is,
like,
but
a little,
why
like,
would
secret
it...
agent seal?
No, but it's like the like, you know how you have like the sigils?
Yeah.
They may be meaning sigils.
Oh.
Yeah, not like a, yeah. Because like the or like icon, you know?
Yeah, but like in my head, it's much funnier as like one of those Japanese mascot stuffy animal guys, but with like a cloak on and he's like, do-do-do,
I just saw like the profile of a seal. Because it's like an icon, so it's like the profile of a seal in a cloak, and in one paw it's just gripping a dagger.
Yeah.
Cloak and Dagger was a fighting style common in the Renaissance, involving a knife hidden beneath a cloak. The term later came into use as a metaphor, referring to situations involving intrigue, secrecy, espionage, or mystery. Scream for Help, 1984, and this movie, both 1984 releases, were the final screenplays that screenwriter Tom Holland.
Spider-Man?
No relation.
Better be Spider-Man. He better be a time traveler.
Had produced prior to him becoming a director with 1985's Fright Night. All three films featured the same basic plot. A kid discovers their life is in danger, but no one will believe them. Henry Thomas was nominated for the Young Artist Award for Best Actor.
For this movie. Oh, nice.
He also said that the film is pretty exciting. It's got some violence in it. I get to fire a gun.
How old was he when he said that?
I don't know how old he was in this. I mean, he would have said that when, like, this movie was about to come out, like, the interview.
So it's probably, like, rounds. Maybe 10 years old?
Yeah. If he was, like, older than 12, I'd be really surprised.
Yeah. It's adorable. Be like, I fired a real gun.
So 10 sounds about right.
Before the days that they had orange rings around fake guns. Principal photography went from August 8th to October 7th, 1983. And filming took place in San Antonio, Texas, chosen because it was Thomas's hometown. So that he didn't have to fly out to Hollywood to make this. Probably made him feel a little bit more comfortable to be in his own hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Critical to the movie's plot is an Atari video game called Cloak and Dagger, made for the Atari 5200. The arcade version appears in the movie. The Atari 5200 version was started, but was never completed. Whenever the game is played in the film, it's from the arcade version. You can actually see the upright game cabinet standing in Morris's computer room when Davey walks over and gets a walkie-talkie off the shelf. So you can see it in the background. It's not on at the moment, but then whenever they are like playing it, like when he's playing it at home, they just plugged the arcade version into the TV monitor. Mm-hmm. And Neil Gaiman reviewed Cloak and Dagger for Imagine magazine and stated that director Richard Franklin's fascination with Alfred Hitchcock continues and echoes lines and themes of Hitchcock films crop up all through this engaging and enjoyable film. So you have to like this movie because Neil Gaiman likes this movie. The Alamo is also featured in the following year in 1985's What?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, we discussed it in our Collateral Cinema episode.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Sorry. I just don't remember that.
It's okay. It's not the time of year for all those pistons to be firing. It's Pee-wee's Big Adventure!
And the rest are in scene.
Nice.
So we're going to jump into it?
Going to jump into the plot.
Yeah.
Uncover this plot.
Yes.
Uncover the I don't know, diet. I don't know. I was trying to go for like a whole like uncovering the plot of the evildoers sort of thing because it's Cloak and Dagger. So everything's hidden. We're going to uncover it.
Woo. Yeah.
Decloakify. I'm sure that's a word.
Yeah. I started something and I was trying to roll it downhill and it just didn't happen.
Here's what I posit. What if we put a lot of it in D&D terms?
Okay. I'm here for that.
Every time we start to argue about something, we can roll for initiative.
Does anybody have dice on hand?
In a bag across the room?
I have a dice roller on my phone.
You had one on your phone.
I still do.
I don't, because I own dice like a regular dragon.
Well, then be all fancy. I don't need this on my phone. I have actual dice.
Are you going to pull it out, really?
Do we need to? I think it would really kind of slow things down if we... It's like, I have a comment. Let me roll for it.
Your persuasion has passed my check. So, Jen, we won't do the whole D&D thing. But
all right.
You have to admit there's a lot of it in here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just video game based. It's also got some board game themes and even references in the first scene.
Right.
Which we will begin to describe to you now. Plotters, strap in to your harness and jump out of that airplane.
And make sure that you are equipped with a retractable U.S. flag parachute. So we start off and it's an evening scene. And
it reminds me of The Exorcist because there's a guy standing outside of like a white stone gate with wrought iron bars.
Right. But when we get in closer to that guy, we see that he's a soldier mm-hmm. and he's speaking Russian.
Yes.
And he hears something falling he hears an airplane going over.
He walks out into the middle of the street and he's looking around and looking around and he's looking around and he's looking forever. And then out of the sky, we see the American flag parachute and he just tackles him. And then you hear punching noises underneath the parachute.
And then who comes out but a man with one of those berets. Oh. And this is the actor Dabney Coleman. And he appears throughout the movie. He's
every dad in the 80s in every film you've seen.
Right. He also, when I was looking through his IMDb, he was the antagonist in 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton.
Yes, I watched that man die. Mm-hmm. not literally.
In the movie?
Didn't he die in 9 to 5? They give him rat poison or something.
I've never seen 9 to 5.
Neither have I.
I love that song, too. It's like pure, like, anti-capitalist, socialism good bullshit.
And it's almost feminist, except just shy of
the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. The song feels very feminist.
Yeah.
So, anyways, so fighting goes on underneath the American flag parachute, and mm-hmm. then who pops out but Dabney Cole, and he presses a button, and retractable U.S. parachute is retractable.
Yeah.
And then he is just like goes over to he like kind of like
he takes the position of the Russian soldier, and then watches as a delegate car situation looks like pulls into what might be an embassy.
Yeah, it feels very official.
Yeah.
And he gets inside, he like walks over to the to the front door as the car is pulling up. And I'm like, you're not being very stealthy, guy.
Yeah, he's not subtle. But okay, so we've had a Russian guy and then a Middle Eastern man gets out of the car. Mm-hmm. And then a woman in a big shiny outfit gets out of the car. And then
a Nazi?
Yeah, a German Nazi gets out of the car, like handcuffing himself to a case. And it's like, this is a who's who of bad guys, stereotypical bad guys.
Yeah.
Reaganite bad guys.
There you go.
Reagan era economic bad guys.
Yeah. So he turns on his saw watch, like goes up behind the guy with the Nazi, like cuts off the briefcase, shoots the Middle Eastern guy. Oh, no, he just shoves the Middle Eastern guy.
Right.
The lady turns around and she's like eyeballing him. She's giving him elevator eyes.
And he's looking back. He takes his hat off and he puts it right in front of his heart.
Right. And she like pulls a gun out of her boobs and shoots him, but it ricochets off of the hat, hits her once. She goes down.
Yeah.
He like checks on her to make sure she's dead, and then walks away with the suitcase.
Yeah.
And now he's running. There's a gate that closes in front of him.
Right.
And so now how's he going to escape? But then what comes at him? But a set of die. They roll down a big red and yellow die.
What? Yeah. This isn't a movie about an actual spy man?
No. Now that we've killed at least two, if not three people. No, four people.
It was all in game. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't count them in my murders. So so then now we're in reality.
Right. It's basically a change of perspective in the scene. Because I would say that these are very much the same scene. Though I suppose in screenwriting, they may not. I don't know anything about screenwriting. Don't listen to anything I say.
Neil Gaiman, if you listen to our podcast, could you write us a letter?
If you're listening to our podcast, what are you doing listening to our podcast?
Neil Gaiman, I already pretend you listen to our podcast. So, hey, baby, how's it going?
Can you introduce me to David Tennant?
Could you introduce me to you? And Jen. I will introduce you to Jen.
Dear Neil. There aren't enough hours left in your life to be listening to this podcast.
What? Jen!
We have been here for a year, and we're not even past the first scene.
That's true, but Neil Gaiman's the first head to go in the Futurama jar. Okay?
We literally started this episode like a month ago.
True.
Okay, so let's cut to some nerdy kids playing dice games in the back room of a game store.
Right. So after the dice roll and we transition into these kids playing on this, board, that's when we see Henry Thomas, who's playing Davey, the main character. And he just says, Jack Flack escapes. And the girl who's with him is like,
I had twice as many bullets as you. Why did I win?
Right. Or like, she's just like, that's not possible. And it's all like, you know, this, it's very much in like a, like one of those tabletop role playing games.
Yeah. He rolled a 24. His agility's 24. Tell her, Morris.
And Morris pretty much says, yeah, he's got all these other stats. And she's like, but I had all these bullets and he didn't. And be like, that's not always what you need.
I haven't been able to beat him. Either.
Yeah, I like that addition that Davey is so like hardcore on this game that he knows all of the rules, that even someone who is older than him is not as good at it because of the fact that it's not like nearly as much of an obsession. The little girl is named Kim, and they're playing in the back of this store with the guy who's like running the store, making sure the store works. Mm-hmm. And that guy's name is Morris.
Morris got big Coke bottle glasses. Kim is a little blonde girl with a lisp. And yeah. and Davey is just exactly who you think he is. He's the kid from E.T. grown up a little bit.
Yeah.
I do have a Sean fact on
store. Sorry, was there a button you wanted to hit for that? No, just kidding. You don't have to hit
that button. Yeah, I'm just going to hit that button every single time I have a Sean fact.
I mean, the volume isn't on,
but it'll be picked up in it'll be picked up in post. I just don't want to hit the beep every time and hear it has.
Okay. I feel you. Go on.
Okay.
So the gamekeeper, the store, is in an actual shop located in the Glendale Galleria in Glendale, California, a few miles from Universal Studios. It was an actual game chain.
Nice.
Oh, that was it. Okay, so it was a good fact.
Yeah.
I wish it was still there. Is it still there? Somebody Google it.
Now it's a GameStop.
Well, it is actually, I don't have this in the Sean facts, but I remember reading. It is an actual store, but it is all board games now. And they do have areas for people to sit down and play the games, too.
Okay.
That's nice.
That is nice. So Jack Flack always escapes. Is that,
yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. This scene really sets up some of the different, like, the characters of Davey and Kim, who are, like, integral to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But it also sets up the fact that Morris knows a lot about games. He's the nerd. He's the gadget guy?
Yeah, and he's also the safe non-parent adult.
Right. He also gifts them walkie-talkies, which ends or lets them borrow walkie-talkies,
yes,
which end up being important later on.
He's asking them to go get him some tech pamphlets for some manuals.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, mostly Davey's like, oh, that's boring. I don't want to do that. And he's like, oh, but you also has to get me a Twinkie. And there's a secret message inside.
Yeah, but it doesn't actually.
Davey's trying to make the best out of a crappy situation. Mm-hmm. He's like, I know this is BS, but I need something to do. And I'm like, child labor, huh?
I can go ahead and hilarious. Explain this.
Yeah.
I didn't know we would be getting through this scene so quickly, but I do have another Sean fact about the scene.
Throw it out there.
There is a Japanese language poster in the game shop for the Atari 2600 video game console. What is that video game?
Oh, I know. Wow, I've watched this movie a lot.
You watched it 3 times. I did not pick up on any of it. Please,
is it Donkey Kong? Dang. Oh, is it Pac-Man?
Is it Sonic? Oh, Jen's face is so, so offended right now.
This is 1984.
I know.
It's not Super Mario Brothers, is it?
That's not Atari.
Sorry.
Well, there was an Atari version, but it was really stripped down.
Yeah, that's what I totally didn't misstep what I said. Okay,
Or maybe it was just Mario Brothers that would
have. It's not Pong.
Was it the E.T. video game?
Woohoo! Lydia got it!
That was the only other one.
Henry Thomas also starred as that role. I think we've covered that like 50 times. E.T. is widely regarded as the worst video game flop of all time and one of the worst playing games. Atari buried millions of unsold carts in a landfill in New Mexico at a huge financial loss for the company. That's also, I mean, one of the reasons that this game never came to the Atari was done, basically, by the time that this movie actually came out.
Oh, wow.
Which is why your comment about Atari calling you and thanking you for playing one of their games was so funny.
When Morris is like, go get it done, and that he packs up his stuff. He packs a baseball, he packs a squirt gun that doesn't have the orange safety ring that we see on kids' guns now, because mm-hmm. kids kept getting shot for having fake guns. And then he fills it with like red monster blood, it says on it. And then the screen flat, they go to leave, and they ask to take the walkie-talkies, which are super fancy, I think, for the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the screen flashes game start.
Yeah.
And I was like, that, I think, is a Lydia noticeable worthy transition, because I thought, now's where the plot begins.
Right. And it would be very easy to make this into a film that like treats Davey's perspective as being like unreliable, like, oh, it's all in his head, until it really isn't.
Hmm.
So I feel like they play with that, but they always still treat Davey's perspective with a lot of sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't deride him for, like, they show the danger in, you know, constantly living in a fantasy world, or, you know, just constantly living in your mind, but they don't demonize him for it.
That's true. So these kids are all around Texas with their bus passes, and so they make it to the building downtown. We don't know how long of a trip it is, but mm-hmm. it's something. And they jump off the bus, and Davey runs ahead, and he gets distance between him and Kim, who's, okay, so he goes by the code name Jack Flack, she goes by the code name Lady Ace, and she's all like, he's all like, play along, and she's like, not if you're going to be embarrassing.
Yeah.
And he proceeds to be as embarrassing as possible.
Right. Like he gets far ahead of her, and it causes her to not be able to cross the street when he does. And so that's when he pulls out the walkie-talkies and is like, be serious about this. And she's like, this is what I meant by embarrassing. But then when they actually get into the building, he has his gun out, and he's like, you know, doing all these like, he's
running through a busy lobby,
trying really hard to not be trying really hard to be inconspicuous
yeah,
and being very, very conspicuous.
The security guard watches him and is like, what the? And then Kim catches up with him and they're looking at the directory and the guard comes up and he's all like, what do you guys need? Except he's much more polite about it and professional. And he like, Davey, who hasn't turned around, tucks his gun into his waistband. And Kim is like, we're looking for a tectonic. And he's like, oh, you want to go to the 7th floor or 6th floor?
Right. The gaming division. He's like, oh, OK, this kid now makes sense. He's just like not able to really parse out.
Right. So Davey doubles down on the game of it. And he's like, OK, I'm going to take the fire stairs and you take the elevator and we'll convene up there. And she's like, over it.
Yeah.
But he's standing with her as she's waiting for the elevator. And these two gentlemen come stand next to them and they're like, you know, adjusting their suits and whatever. And Davey notices there's a gun under a guy's arm. And right. So just they enter the elevator, which is a really beautiful, ornate wooden elevator. Did you notice that?
It's the kind of elevators that I always remember seeing in big fancy buildings in the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah. They did not think about the 80s is they did not mind paying a lot for, you know, things to look fancy.
That's true.
They're not going to do that now.
Nope. They just want it to be like...
monotone.
Durable.
Durable and monotone.
Yeah.
Can't have too much flashy things.
Anyway, so he grabs her from going in and she's like, hey, what are you doing? And the guys don't even seem to notice. The door's closed and he's like, that guy had a gun, a real gun. And she's like, Davey. Nah.
Yeah, she doesn't believe him that, you know, he saw something.
You're playing around too much, basically, is her problem.
Right. And so he puts her into another elevator.
Well, she walks over to the other elevator.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, here, take this grenade just in case. And he throws her baseball. And what does she do?
She's like, thanks.
Thanks anyway.
Thanks anyway.
And then throws it right back to him and the door's closed.
Yeah.
So then he ends up in the stairwell going up. And he like takes a sweet ass time in the elevator. She gets upstairs to Tectonics and... And like he does message her. He's like, hey, we need to maintain radio silence. And she's like, great.
And then like he sees something. So when he's in the stairwell, you have these windows. And the only thing that I can surmise is that there is a building next to him that has a reflective surface, because when he looks out the window, he sees a reflection of himself.
Right. And he goes to turn off his radio and he hears like some don't let him get away. Follow him, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, he messaged her back and he's like, hey, did you hear that? But he messages her while she's talking to the secretary on that floor. And she's like, do you have some manuals that I could have?
And, right. And then she asks about the vending machine to get the Twinkies.
And the lady's like, oh, and then the walkie talkie squawks. And mm-hmm. She's like, excuse me, and walks away. And she's like, I thought you said we're going to maintain radio silent.
So is her lisp the one thing that just irritates
no,
you?
No, I love a lisp. Oh, okay. Oh, a speech impediment is one of my favorite things. I know, okay. I'm not allowed to make fun of it, but she's a child and I'm a grown person and I can make fun of hers today.
It is kind of wooden, though, her delivery on some things.
Yeah. I think the most adorable thing about her is her lisp, actually. She's a cute little girl, but like she does not have the chops he has in terms of acting.
Oh, yeah. And I think the writing kind of is a little bit detrimental to... So there's this thing when you're writing kids, you have to like write them as they would actually talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy as an adult to write kids talking as an adult.
Yeah, that might be it.
And like, it's one thing if Davey does that because he already sees himself as a spy. But it's another thing if she does it because she's the one who's like trying to ground him back mm-hmm, to reality mm-hmm. because they're like friends. But she still talks to him in the same like begrudging, like overworked, like.
Okay, so. Thought experiment. Imagine everything she says as being said by the wife in the movie we reviewed, Baby, the lady scientist.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine everything she says coming out of her mouth would sound exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. It would.
And it doesn't make sense either way.
Right.
Well, I guess it kind of makes sense on the baby one, but not on this one.
Right.
This is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know of any like 10-year-old who would be like, this is embarrassing. I think they would probably say something along the lines, especially since she's coded younger
mm-hmm.
than him. She either has to have had all of these experiences with him that kind of bring her into this place of like he's just playing around.
Yeah.
Or she would be the kind of kid who is enthralled by these things to a point where she takes it seriously. And like I feel like the dialogue could be skewed a little bit more towards that. where she's like a little bit like, okay, I don't see anything that's happening. All the, like, he's saying this is a grenade, but it's clearly a baseball. Like, maybe she's a little bit tired of it.
Well, she later on, she says that he's the only kid that's not boring.
Right.
And so I want her to be more engaged with it, but the sisters be getting stuff done. So she gets the pamphlets. She gets the Twinkies. She's like, we got to get this thing going. Maybe it's because she's in front of adults. Maybe if we saw them have more play, it would be more childlike. But I think you have a point about it being kind of an adult speaking through a kid.
It feels like an adult speaking through a kid.
Conspiracy theory.
Oh, no.
Davy is her imaginary friend.
Oh!
That makes so much sense. I'm going to give you a high five.
So Davy is, he hears this thing on the walkie-talkie. He puts his walkie-talkie away and he sees, he still has the ball out, but he goes up another flight of stairs and he sees the reflection of these guys in a window.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees one of the guys beat up another guy in a lab coat.
Yes.
And one of the guys in the lab coat makes a run for it.
He falls against the wall and holds the cartridge up against the wall before he manages to open the door and escape.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that.
Yeah, well, you have to watch it three times, Lydia, to be able to notice all these particular details.
I think I did watch it three times.
It doesn't matter. The guy, like, does this really, really dramatic. He, like, opens the door after the guy closes it behind him. And he does that kind of, like, and not in the same way, but did you ever watch this Childish Gambino's This Is America?
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
And he holds the gun and he's like, ugh. He's kind of, like, bent, awkward.
Yeah. It's the way you're describing it, it reminds me of how people would draw a gun in like the 1940s.
Yeah, or like a Western film where it was super dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like that. And then he's like, so then Davy's like staring wide-eyed and then the door above him crashes open because he's been watching a reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he like walks in all like stiff.
And he's got he's got this cartridge hanging out of his hand. And he's like, and
help,
he's got,
help me.
He's got this very bright red paint on him that's supposed to be blood.
It's very small.
It is small.
Yeah. The gunshot wounds in this have not been gaping. It is obviously supposed to be downplayed.
Yeah. Well, it's a kid's film, too.
I want more viscera.
Why aren't there sinews getting poked out of his stomach?
That's not enough of viscera.
This doesn't seem realistic. Thou embarrassing.
Her picture on IMDb is just a picture from this movie, so I don't know if she's done anything since then. I didn't look.
Me neither. And so the injured man comes down the stairs and he hands the cartridge to Davy and he says, you must get this to the FBI. Tell them the code is 1,329.
So then they bust in the stairwell again. And,
oh, yeah, that's that. He does.
And he knocks the baseball out of Davy's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he stands up and he gets shot two more times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, run! And then Davy runs because he's not absolutely dumb. And the guy falls down, like, what is it? Oh, they're on the sixth floor. So he falls like five, six flights of stairs down, like down the center of the shaft of the stairwell.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very boxy.
Yeah. And like at some point his body would have hit something anyways.
I'm a huge fan of, and maybe Titanic was the first time I ever saw it, but the conk of a falling body is just like, I expect it now. I want it.
Right. And Davy runs all the way down to the bottom of the stairs. He goes out to the lobby and he says, police, police, there's been a murder.
He sees Kim's there and she's like, I got the Twinkie. He's all like, he's like, murder, murder. And the guard is like, what? And runs over to like help. And he's like, call the police.
Yeah, and he pretty much explains that there was a guy who was murdered by these two guys in the stairway.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, that when they go in there, though, they open up the door and there's nobody.
So you pointed out, like, how did they get all the blood and the body out of there in what appears to be less than 15 seconds?
Right.
But they left the baseball. Well, no, the guy had the baseball.
Davy dropped the baseball to hold on to the cartridge, and he's holding on to the cartridge with both hands.
That's true.
And so at some point in the scuffle, the guy would have picked up the baseball.
And on my first watching, this is when I realized that Davy and Kim are not related. I thought they were brothers and sisters for this long. It's just a weird little I don't understand films moment.
That's okay.
Okay, so they, one guard's like, we gotta talk to the police. And he's like, all right, you and I gotta talk to the police. Then we cut to the police taking them home. She's like, he's like, are you gonna be all right? Kim's like, that's okay, I have a key. And she walks alone to her house.
Right. I'm pretty sure like nowadays a police officer would have escorted her to her house.
I would not drop off a minor until I saw their parent.
Right.
I mean, that's just good math.
That's just science, baby.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or just safety.
that's just safety, baby.
Bewildered dad meets cop and lieutenant. What's his face? And Davey at the door.
And this is when we see that the guy that Davey is seeing as...
We haven't mentioned it at all.
Oh, wow. We really did start this a month ago.
Okay, so he's talking in the stairwell before, like while he's watching Reflections and stuff, he's talking to Jack Flack, who is looks like the guy in our first scene who resembles the little model figurine he's been carrying around that he uses for the board game.
Yep.
And he just talks to him about spy stuff and like following procedure and like collecting stuff and like watching himself and like...
Right, when he's talking to the police or to the lobby guard, Jack specifically tells Davey, don't worry about, you know, giving him too much information. That's like rule one of espionage. You only give out the information that someone else needs in order to get you further in. And so like that's what stops Davey. But you see this moment where Davey like looks off into the distance and we see he's having a conversation with Jack Flack, but the security guard doesn't see. All he sees is this kid like kind of zoning out.
There's a lot of panning to empty space from adults in this film, and it's pretty good. Yeah. I'm there for that.
Yeah.
Like in my head, and I don't watch The Office anymore, but every time Jim turned and looked at the camera, like straight to camera, I always imagined that there was no camera because he would act like these people do in front of like video documentary of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just imagine Jim looking at a wall like the sociopath he is.
Agreed.
So when we eventually get back to Davey's house, yes, we see that Jack Flack is also the same guy who plays his dad, Dabney Coleman. Yeah. And I like that because it kind of is leading into how everything's going to play out later on with, you know, like fictional heroes versus real heroes.
And how often they're the same thing for us, but we put a different facade on it. So,
right,
you know, his dad is a military man who's, you know, just he's a single dad. He's trying really hard. But like being a parent, I mean, none of us have done it, but like it is exhausting. And we've all done semblances enough of it to be like,
yeah,
could you imagine just being so like emotionally and physically exhausted, having lost your own spouse? And then like, you got a kid who's like bringing police to your door because he was supposed to get some pamphlets and a Twinkies for a random mall guy. And he's like, no, I'm going to call murder. The boy who called murder, right, Jen?
That was the name of the short story, I think.
The boy cried murder.
That was close enough.
And so we get some exposition from the dad about, you know, dead mom and the fact that the lieutenant or the police guy that he was talking to was like, this kid was not giving us any information. If it wasn't for the girl, we wouldn't have even been able to find him.
He only gave his name, rank and serial number.
Yeah. And then like the last thing that the police guy says at the end of the scene is, you know, if he was working for us, I'd feel pretty safe.
Adorable.
It is. Child soldiers.
Yeah. So now he's been set upstairs. His dad walks in. We pan past a picture of his mom and dad. So like just reinforce the sad mom, dad, dead thing. Right. And he's immediately playing with soldier toys again. He's like, you just dropped off by the police, young man.
Mm-hmm.
You should just be acting contrite a little bit.
Yeah.
But maybe it's his decompression. I don't know his life. I do know his life. I've watched the entire movie.
Three times.
Yeah. But he's all like, his dad's like, now tell me about these dead people. He's all, he starts to explain and he's just like, this is ridiculous. I'm paraphrasing. And he's like, if mom was here, she'd believe me. And I'm like, all right. Pulling the dead mom card right then. Like,
yeah.
It seems a little insincere.
Right. It is like one of those moments that does make me feel like, you know, a thing that a kid would say, especially because it leans into the whole idea that Davey had such a close relationship with his mom. And chances are, does this feel like a summer, like they're in the summer?
They have to because he doesn't go to school.
Right. And so let's say that it's in the summer. he's probably, I'm guessing, about 10, 11. Mm-hmm. His mom is recently dead. So like how many years did he spend with just his mom, with just this imagination? She probably flourished the imagination. She probably like encouraged it. And his dad is just, you know, like he has a good relationship with his dad, because his imaginary hero literally looks like his dad. But it still is one of those things where you can tell there's a distance between the two of them. Like, they haven't had time to really build that connection in the same way that he has with his mom. And that's what I like about the line. If mom was here, she would believe me.
I like that he wasn't like, shut up, you brat. He was all like, yeah, she probably would have.
Yeah.
Thank you, Applauder, for joining us for part one of our first episode of 2023 with our review of 1984's Cloak and Dagger. We've still got two more parts saved in our secret storage compartment and can't wait to bring you the rest of our plot walkthrough and our shocked and applaudable moments. Looking for more globe-trotting adventures in the world of cinema podcasts? We were recently guests on Collateral Cinema's 69th episode to discuss another 80s children's classic, Goonies. And Scott and Cam from Spyhards also reviewed Cloak and Dagger back in September of 2020. Check out links to these episodes in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and someone who is also known for secret missions involving Twinkies, Jen. Do you find yourself asking where the cream filling is in our edited for content bleeped episodes? For only $1 per month, you can become an official Applauder and gain access to our entire back catalog of unbleeped episodes, as well as support our efforts to keep the show free from sponsored ads. Visit shockedandapplaud.com and click on the Become an Applauder link at the top to learn more. We'll be back next week for part two of this 80s children's action thriller. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.